It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. It's my great pleasure to welcome gentlemen into the studio. Give listeners your name, full name, and what your position is.
Yeah, my name is Kevin Linkford, and I'm a fire prevention officer with the Mat-Su Division of Forestry.
Very good. The Mat-Su Division of Forestry. When you say that, people, I'm sure, have different images of what it might be. Maybe share, what is it in terms of the areas of responsibility? Where is it located? And then we can get to the detail of what you actually do.
Yeah, it's located off of Airport Road, 101 South Airport Road in Palmer, so directly at the airport. And then the DOF encompasses a lot of different things. So we manage burn permits and firefighting itself. And then additionally, we do a lot of like wood cutting permits and assisting people in getting saplings and a little bit of forest management and fuel breaks and all sorts of stuff in the woods.
Okay, now when people start thinking about the season for wildfires and fire, although if you've been here long enough, you know that it could be winter and something happens, but the big time season appears to be spring through fall. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, April 1st through August 31st is typically when we see most of our fire activity in the state. In the beginning, it's grass season. Sometimes there's a little lull with the green up, and
right,
everything's a little wetter. And then after that, we see our harder woods burning. So spruce and birches and cottonwoods, those are more inclined to burn.
So when you start talking about a variety of wood, since we have accessory wood-burning stove in our home, I'm very familiar with making sure that my seasoned wood is birch, etc. What's the difference in terms of the burning of the variety of woods you've just described?
In terms of what we see as far as our fire activity goes, spruce trees are typically where we are bound to encounter the more intense fire activity because the BTUs, which is like the heat index, is much higher with those because they have the really fine fuels on them with all those needles, right?
Right.
Additionally, they are the ones that are getting killed by beetles. So we'll see a lot more dead spruce trees. And so those are far more volatile than our hardwoods because hardwoods, additionally, they carry more moisture. And
right,
so they're less inclined to burn.
And, okay. Yeah, something familiar to anyone but burning wood, how long it takes to age to get the water out.
Right.
Okay. So when we talk about the Mat-Su, people want to say the size of, and they pick some reference of West Virginia, et cetera. It's a big place. Much of the Mat-Su, in my experience, is unpopulated.
Mm-hmm.
Is it safe to say that the areas that are likely to get your attention are more populated or unpopulated? I can see that being two ways.
Yeah, that varies pretty heavily. So most likely, for the Mat-Su DOF, we deal with populated areas. We work in a wildland-urban interface. It's called a WUI because oftentimes the fires that we encounter are off of a roadway. Most of our fires are human-caused,
right,
by a large margin,
okay,
in the Mat-Su Valley. When we are going off-road, and this is why we have the helitack, so we utilize helicopters for places that we can't access easily, right? That's when we're out in the woods, and those are typically like lightning-caused fires as opposed to something that is caused by humans, right?
Right. Now, I happen to live in downtown Palmer, so we spend a lot of time going on Airport Way, and I'm always watching to see what new aircraft have arrived. Obviously, there's a lot of aircraft traffic. In the spring, I say the season is here when I see all of those white and green and other colored aircraft that have arrived. So how's that work? Yeah, there must be an arrangement because I notice many of them are from Canada, for example.
Yeah, and some of the ones in Canada are from here, right? That goes both ways. So we just sent a tanker and Pioneer Peak hotshots over to Alberta just to assist with their fires right now.
Okay.
And it works in a number of ways. They're contracted out. So like our helicopter currently in the Mat-Su is Soloy Helicopters, and they provide that to us for the season along with a pilot who's carted for carrying personnel, doing sling loads, doing bucket work. And then additionally, we have the tankers, the big planes that you see drop the retardant, the red stuff,
right,
over a fire.
Got it.
And we have air attack and fire bosses, which are the ones that like they have the skids for landing on water on them, and they can like pick up water as they go. And yeah, it's like a smaller scale tanker.
Right. you have used the word we, and two of you are here today. There are more than two people involved with this. And my guess, just looking at the number of vehicles in the parking lot, there's quite a jump up in personing the station here. Talk a little bit about who it is that's there. You have some hotshot crews. You have other things, too.
Yeah. So this actually sort of correlates with a number of things. It correlates to the size of our area, because we cover a massive area of 1.6 million acres.
Right.
So we need a fair amount of personnel in order to cover that effectively and be able to fight fire aggressively, and get a knock on them. So we have the hotshot crew, Pioneer Peak Hotshots, as well as Gannett Glacier. They are a Type 2 IA crew. So that's like a step down, and that is determined based off the qualifications that are on the crew, right? So what they have signed off, what they can do legally. And in addition to those crews, there's a tech shop is what it's called, because our jobs, we're wildland fire resource technicians, which the definition of technician is actually really good. It's a specialist in the technical details of a subject or occupation, which we absolutely are. Yeah, we do a variety of different things in the job itself as technicians. Like, the crews are more built for extended attack firefighting, which means long-term, 2 weeks on a fire, 16 hours a day, 2 days off, rinse and repeat, right? Whereas the technicians can work those long hours, but oftentimes we're doing initial attack as well. So we get the fires right when they're starting, and ideally we stop them right then and there and don't need to utilize the crews for that extended attack.
So it's my understanding that in materials that you provided point to, you really don't want to fight a fire so much as to prevent the fire.
Absolutely. Like, to say the least, the ideal goal is to prevent fires to begin with. And that comes in a number of ways. So we have the three E's, which is like engineering. It includes sign building and kiosk building and getting posters out to the public, like building our burn permits as well.
Right.
And then education, which is encompassed in a number of ways. We do school trips, we do these radio shows right here, and so education, and then enforcement, which is my least favorite probably, but it's a necessity sometimes.
So talk a little bit about that enforcement aspect. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I am a certified peace officer for the state of Alaska, and we can enforce certain statutes and regulations, and some of them are specific to the fire season. So from April 1st through August 31st, you are required to have a small-scale burn permit for anything bigger than a 3x3 cooking, warming, camping fire, right? So if I go to a fire and somebody doesn't have a burn permit, or they're not abiding by the burn permit, the goal there is education, and sometimes that is all we need to do, right?
Okay.
But if it's a second, a third offense where you're burning trash, which you cannot do according to your permit, you're only allowed to burn, organic materials. Yeah, so then we take it a step further. We can go written warnings. We can go a citation. And then for the larger fires that end up burning people's structures down, Sockeye Fire, McKinley Fire, those things can go to litigation and the Office of Special Prosecutions for the state of Alaska.
Okay. You've obviously, I'm going to guess, have had a lot of training, and having formerly spent time on a couple of different ambulance crews in Nome and here in Palmer, I know that one of the biggest things was keeping up skills. You're doing the work, but how much training is part of your day when you're not out in the field with a fire?
Yeah, great question. We have a reserved hour a day for physical training, so to
sure.
stay in shape in order to do the job. But additionally, and it's especially because we are seasonal employees. We're permanent employees with the state, but we're seasonal. So I had 5 months off this year. So it's some of these skills are you don't use them, you lose them sort of things.
I understand.
So at the beginning of the season, we did 6 weeks of training, and that is refreshing everything and then additionally building on the skills that you already have.
Okay. Talk a little bit for those people who are listening and might say, I wonder if I want to do this. How did you actually become what you are today? When did you have that first idea, and what did you do?
Yeah. Well, in high school, I wanted to be a firefighter. My mom was sick, so I wanted to do EMS and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Right? I wanted to assist people however I could. So at 16, I was in the Anchorage Fire Explorers, and that kind of set me on path to attend UAF and their fire science program, which is pretty prestigious. It's like one of the best fire science programs in the nation.
Okay.
And so that was a fantastic experience. I determined that a lot of structural firework is EMS calls as well as fire, and I kind of preferred just fighting fire, which is what we do, right?
Right.
So I ended up in a college class. I met somebody who was on Pioneer PCOS shots, and he was like, come out on the crew, and I went out. I didn't go with Pio, but I went with another hand crew, and yeah, that was the beginning of my fire career.
Okay. Yeah, I know you receive payment. It's from the state of Alaska. Is the state of Alaska paying your way?
Yeah.
Giving you a check?
Yeah, it's the state. Yeah, we are permanent, seasonal state employees.
Okay. So that means that I put those two together and say that each year you have a job when you come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Now,
we don't have to reapply every year by any means.
I have looked over some of the statistics that you provided, and I noted that the number of fires showed a rather steep decline for a couple of years that seemed to coincide with the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's the case. So have you been able, people who've looked at this, say they're What's the reason? It was because people weren't getting them out there and starting fires, or any observations about that?
Yeah, good question. I think there's probably a number of reasons. Absolutely. I would say that the pandemic played a part in it, just because people are less likely to go outside, less likely to have a gathering. And people were kind of just holed up to themselves a bit. Of course, we would also like to take credit somewhat because we have this active educational outreach program, and we try to ensure that the public has a good understanding of how to burn safely and effectively without risking, causing a wildfire.
Okay.
Which can be a big deal because you can be, well, lawyers salivate when they hear it, but there's presumed negligence. So it's just assumed that if your fire escapes, like, it's that easy to charge you with it, right? And then also you can be charged for two times the cost of anything that you burn down, which can get pretty high pretty rapidly.
I can imagine that, yes. Now, you've talked about human-caused fires, but in addition, it's my understanding that the state of Alaska, being the size it is in the weather conditions we have, a lot of lightning. People talk about lightning strikes and starting of fires. How does that play into all this?
Yeah. So statewide, when we look at the big picture, most of our acreage, like in terms of acreage burned, is caused by lightning fires. And like the Southwest area, which is McGrath and just Southwest Alaska as a whole, that's 66 million acres that they cover out there. Most of their fires, 80%, I believe, are lightning caused. And sometimes when there's no structures at risk, you want to let those fires burn because fire is good for the landscape to some extent, right? And yeah, so you compare that versus working in the wildland urban interface like we do in the Matsu Valley,
right,
where everything's accessed via roadways. We see a lot more burn barrels and fireworks and a variety of causes.
Right. So one of the things that people are always looking toward is some predictive quality to understanding what this year is going to be as a wildfire year. Do you have any comments or sense of how things are going given the present circumstances, knowing it's a very difficult thing to predict?
Absolutely. And we have a number of systems in place to help us predict this. So even any member of the public can go on the AICC website and look there at the fire weather danger and then go and look at the grass adjective and the spruce adjective. And when you're looking at that, it's kind of hard to comprehend what you're actually looking at, but that's how we determine if our fire danger rating signs are at moderate or very high. And when we do those, we're looking at like the buildup index and the initial spread index and how much humidity and the winds that are forecasted. Because all of these things, like weather is what drives fire, in addition to topography, but primarily weather. So with the season, it's kind of hard to read. Like we've had this overcast weather, but we haven't had a whole lot of precipitation. And at the same time, we had a lot of snow. So in theory, the snow melt would add a lot of humidity, right? But it only takes a week or even less of sun and a little bit of wind to dry these fuels out to the point where they will burn just as rapidly as they would any other year, right?
Okay, that's important consideration. Well, there are two recent stories that I've picked up in the media. One, which is ongoing, is about fires burning in Canada and Nova Scotia. What appears to be a huge, huge set of fires that are affecting the U.S. because the smoke doesn't just stop any one place. And we've experienced that in the past when we've had smoke from Siberia that drifts over or up from the Kenai or one thing or another. Apparent to me that I have not read about anything as large or significant in the U.S. at the present time. Is that accurate, or have I missed some things?
There are fires in the U.S. at the moment.
Okay.
But typically, for the lower 48, we see our fire season a little bit later in the year. So I would anticipate July, August, September. That's when those states are typically burning, whereas Alaska burns a little bit earlier, as well as Canada. And that's for a number of reasons. It's partly due to our fuel type. It's partly due to just the exposure to the sun, how much sun we're getting every day. Like, our fuels have a lot more opportunity to dry here because they're exposed to the sunlight for so long, whereas down south, sun sets earlier, right?
Got it. Well, the second media piece that I picked up on was the discussion of the hillside area in Anchorage, in particular because of all of the foliage that's there, trees, et cetera, and the issue associated with roadways and so on to get in there or get out of there and the rest of that, which leads me to the question of how, when you were speaking about working with people for prevention, I know there have been a variety of programs. I know the borough had one, FireWise program, where someone came and looked at our house, our yard, and we got a pretty good rating. And we had a couple of things we could do to improve that. How much is that happening now in terms of assisting people to understand that having a lot of foliage right around their house, planting spruce trees may not be the best thing, especially if they have a split cedar roof or something like that?
Yes. And you see a lot of those out in the valley sometimes. So that comes in a variety of ways. And as far as the hillside goes,
right,
A lot of that coverage in Anchorage is done by the Anchorage Fire Department. When there is a fire there, obviously we go to assist. Like, that is a priority for us. In fact, we work with cooperators all over the valley. So, like, even the wildfires, we have help from the VFDs and Central and Palmer Fire. Yeah, even in the Matsu, you can call our office. Somebody come and look at your property, FireWise your property, tell you what you need to change. Granted, that is situational on whether or not we can make that happen due to all of us being initial attack resources in addition to other duties, right?
Right.
Hence the technician as the name.
Right. And I've interviewed representatives from the Palmer Fire Department, and they have spoken about the arrangements that are made with forestry, with other services in order to provide cross coverage and the rest of that. Well, I've asked you a lot of questions, and you have provided a whole bunch of great answers. I guess my question to you right now is, for listeners, as you're thinking about all of the different things that you could cover, what important further information or encouragement do you want to give to listeners as we finish up?
Yeah, what I'll say is, maybe don't let the weather bring on complacency, because that's something that we oftentimes see. So yeah, burn permits are required April 1st through August 31st. You can get them online at your local fire station or at forestry. And encompassed in those, it's very important that they're actually read and not just acquired, because those are a legal binding document and it explains how you can burn effectively. But if you want more from that, I would highly recommend coming and just having a conversation with us or calling the number on the burn permit if you really want to know how to do it effectively. Additionally, I'll just say, support your local wildland firefighters, and that can come in a number of ways, via just having a conversation with us so that we can help you help us, or it can come in the form of talking to your legislature about us and letting them know that you care, because that then gives them a plane to stand on, right?
Right. Got it. Okay. Impressive. It's a reminder. Sometimes people know a bit about one or another aspect of fires and fighting fires and so on. I have a memory. I only spent one night fighting a fire in a forest where I was a volunteer, because there was a need to have people spend the night and watch for any places that would start burning again.
Yep.
And it was very impressive to me, because we would be in an area that had been burned over and everything seemed to be fine, except then it wasn't. And I think, to me, that's my personal sense of how important it is to make sure you prevent the fire. And if you do have a fire, to make sure it really is out.
Yes. So and that can be tough in Alaska. What we like to say is, your fire is not out unless it's cold to the touch. And that can require putting water on it, stirring it, water again, stir it. But if you won't put your hand in there, your fire's not out. kind of story. And Alaska is a very unique place to fight fire in that regard because we have such a deep duff layer
right
here. So we'll have fires burn directly through the winter. That all that snowpack doesn't mean much when it has 4 feet of fuel that it can just kick around and kick around and all winter, right?
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
So really, it can be hard to make sure that your fire is out, but I cannot stress the importance of it enough because it'll pop up a week later when you're out of town and you won't even know. Right.
Got it. Got it. Good point. Good last point. Well, stay well out there. Stay safe.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Kevin Lankford, for coming in today.
Appreciate you having me.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.